Servus and welcome to episode 11 of the Pro Hockey Pod. This week, we're joined by someone I definitely look up to in the business over in Germany. He has one of the jobs that I hope to one day have. This guy had a long playing career and now has transitioned into the management side, holding multiple positions, whether it was coach, NHL scout, or now sports manager or general manager, as we say here in Canada. Welcome to the podcast, Axel Oliveira.
Thank you, Andrew. It was nice words there. So
good intro. So always on this podcast, I just like to bring it back to the beginning, kind of where you got your start. So you were born, obviously, in Sweden, in Kiruna, if I'm saying that right. Is that where you learned like the first fall in love with the game?
Yeah, absolutely. That's way up north in Sweden. It's northern Alaska, if you compare it to North America there. So obviously, we had a long winter there, a lot of snow, and ice hockey was part of the lifestyle up there. We had like a ice sheet on the school backyard there, and we played hockey almost year round. So another famous guy coming from there is Börje Salming too. So that was a couple of, it's a big hockey country, hockey city in Sweden back in the days, but not anymore because it's obviously it's going to the bigger cities. And when I grew up, everybody was playing hockey.
So Börje Salming then must have been like, you know, a guy that maybe you looked up to, like also being a defenseman. And he obviously, had a long NHL career. Did you get to meet him at all? Or was he just kind of someone you knew from around town?
He's one of the best role models you could have. And he had actually like a hockey camp in the summers up there. He came back there a couple of summers, and I had a chance to be one of the young guys and taking care of a group there. And I met Börje a couple of times there, and he always recognized me afterwards when we bumped into each other. So that was such a good person. And I was fortunate to meet him a couple of times. Yeah.
And how was, we've talked about this a lot, but back then, like how was the development in terms of, you know, in hockey in Sweden? You know, now it's probably pronounced as one of the best development countries for ice hockey in terms of the work they do with the youth. Was it the same back then, or were they starting to take strides that way?
I've been following the transition there, I would say, like, because when I grew up, you played street hockey, you played afternoons, you played after school, you went on the backyard or the rink in the neighborhood, and you played. We gained a lot of hours back then. And today, I think it's hard to collect those hours. It's more practice with the club, and you have less ice sheets. Of course, it's the winter's been milder, I would say. There's not that easy, and it cost a lot of money to keep that. Back in the days, it was easier. And I don't know if the community had more money to keep those ice sheets in a good shape as well. What can I say more about the Swedish development? That it's been fun to follow it, especially when they started to happen in the mid 20s or something, like 2025, 2005, 2010, in between there, when the Swedish team started to understand, like if you spend more hours on ice with the players and more quality hours and do a lot more individual stuff, we get better hockey players. And everything started actually when Finland had better goalies. And we in Sweden had a discussion, what's going on in Sweden? Why can't we? Like we're as big as Finland. Why can't we produce Finnish goalies and like top goalies like Finland do? And they said, okay, what is Finland doing? And they had goalie coaches. That was nothing that we had when I started to play, 95, 97, 98 in Sweden. We didn't have goalie coaches back then. They said, like, Finland had it. And I said, okay, let's start to work with goalie coaches too in Sweden. And then you had a couple of good goalies coming up there with after Tommy Salo, you had Henrik Lundqvist and all those guys coming up there. And they started with the goalie coaches. And then we said, okay, why don't we start to do the same thing with a D's in Sweden? So then they started to work with a D's, and you get Eric Carlson and all those guys coming up there just from working a lot of hours with the specific coach. And of course, the next step was to bring it up to the forwards too. And that was the transition, I would say, from the late 90s, like 98, 99, 2005, 2010, and 2015, 2020. Today, you have all teams have their coaches, like D coaches, forward coaches, goalie coaches, development coaches. And it's been fun to see the development there. And that's something we try to build in Germany right now too. Like, we are 15 years behind Sweden and Finland in that matter. So you're still having the DL in Germany. You have some teams, they only have two coaches. There's one head coach and one assistant coach. And we don't talk that much about development there either. So.
Do you think I want to get back to your kind of career, but we'll stick on this for now. But do you think like you just brought up like a point about in Germany, especially in the DL, like not a lot of teams, you know, have like maybe three coaches, like some have two, like a head coach and then assistant coach. Do you think that's because of budget, or do they think that they can get away that it's enough having these two?
It's a more of culture to buy in new players when it doesn't work. It's a combination for sure. When you haven't been part of that process, it's hard to know exactly what you should do and how to do it. And it's easier to ship out the player and bring in a new player and think it's the new better player is going to help you win. And overall, in Germany, we don't talk that much about development. It's like, it's more talking about we're a pro league. We're not here to develop. We don't have the time. Why should we spend much time and money on developing young players? And that's still just the reality where we still are in Germany.
Yeah, hopefully with that, they can, slowly transition into the more focus on development, because you can see it every year in the top leagues in Sweden and Finland and the NHL draft. Like, there's 17-year-olds playing in the top league in Sweden and producing and then getting drafted and then going to the NHL. And I would say they are, on average, having way more players making that step in their careers than you would see in Germany. Obviously, in Germany, like, the latest one I can remember is obviously Tim Stützle playing at a younger age, 17, in the DL, but there hasn't been as many as Sweden or Finland, that's for sure.
Oh, that's for sure, absolutely. You can develop all the players as well. I think that's something we need to talk about here in Germany too. Like, if you have a 25, 27-year-old player, like, he hasn't reached his peak yet. Like, you can, even if you're plus 30, you can work on the details, you can practice better to stay on a higher level and get a paycheck for a couple of more years. And I think that's a discussion, like an overall discussion we need to, and of course you need to bring in more coaches who knows how to do it and they've been part of doing that kind of stuff. So but I think it will slowly come to Germany too over the next years.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, and I hope so as well. Transitioning back to kind of your career, one question I had for you, like, obviously in Sweden and in Europe in general, you know, there's not really like a junior league you play in. So you work your way up in the minor hockey system, and then once you're good enough, you jump to the pro level. You obviously did it at a young age. I believe you were, 16, 17 years old when you started playing professional. But the question I had for you was, back then, was there ever the thought of coming to North America and maybe playing major junior, whether it was OHL or even, a little bit later going NCAA?
Not really where I grew up. No, to be honest, I didn't even know about those different options there. It was way up north, an isolated little city up north in Sweden. So no, and there was nobody leaving from there up to North America except for Börje Salming and a couple of other guys who played NHL over the years there from that city. And it was NHL or nothing, I would say. And because you still had a couple of good leagues in Sweden. You can play in the second division, you could play in the first division, and that was like the priority number one to get there. And as long as you saw the path going there, that was what you were aiming and striving for.
How was it playing professional at such a young age? Like, just speaking on myself, like, if there was a pro league, in Canada, you know, not NHL, but maybe the second league or something like AHL, for example. Like, there's no way I could have played at 17. So I'm just curious to how the transition was for you.
I've always been a competitive guy then, and it took me like a while to get respected on the team. And to get respected, it was a couple of fights and a couple of slashings back and forth. And of course, the older guys, we had some guys who were plus 30, you know, and that was old back then. And they played hockey, and then they had another work like for a living. They were electricians, and they were working in the iron mine and all that stuff. And they were pretty tough guys. And you come up as a 17-year-old guy and trying to take their spot and take their paycheck. And you got tested, not every day, but quite a lot from the start. And I realized, like, if I back off 1 millimeter here, I'm not going to make it. So I gave it back pretty much right away. And by Christmas time, my first season, we had a Christmas party. One of the older guys came to me and said, like, yeah, welcome to the team. It took you like 3-4 months to get there, but there was a couple of rough practices to go there, to get there.
Yeah, I mean, clearly you earned their respect. And yeah, back then especially, that's how it was. Like, it wasn't given. You had to earn it.
Yeah. And another thing, when I remember it, that I collected the pucks one whole season because I was the youngest player on the team the whole season. So I took two nets and all the pucks, the puck bucket was like my name on it. So I took care of it the whole first season when I played with the men's there. So
need those guys.
Yeah, exactly.
You also played, which is unique. You know, you played for your country on multiple occasions, but the one I wanted to bring up was the World Juniors. So where was your World Junior tournament, sorry, then, and how was your experience, you know, representing your country?
I played with the national team a couple of times there, but to be honest, I was the last guy who got cut from the under 20 team there. I was the 7th D-man, and they kept me at home, like on home base. They didn't fly me over to North America. I think it was one of the first under 20 tournaments that the world champions that was in North America there. So I was the last guy, and I didn't get the ticket to fly over. That was a little bit annoying, and I was a little bit upset with it. But yeah, that gave me a little bit more fuel to work harder for the next years after that.
Well, definitely, that was going to be my next point, was you definitely use that kind of as motivation, fuel, as you said, because you ended up next 12 years playing in the top league in Sweden, and you're always known for, you know, being like an all-around defenseman, obviously a team guy, but you worked your ass off. Is that something that, you know, from a young age, you just wanted to instill, that I'm going to be known to being a guy that gives it his all every day?
I think that comes from your upbringing too. Like, that was always from the family too. Like, you have to try your best every day. It didn't matter where you were playing soccer or in school or whatever, or you played hockey. That was, I grew up in a competitive environment too, with a couple of uncles who played soccer too. And I was around them, and there was nothing given for free. So you had to work for it. And that's something that, I've been having with me my whole life, actually. That's try your best, whatever you do. So.
And then after those 12 years, I mean, 12 years is a very long time and a great, great career. You decided to, you know, change countries in a sense. So what brought on the opportunity to go to the top Swiss league there in Kloten?
Well, after that, I think I started that process a little bit earlier. Like, it was after 9 or 10 years in the Swedish league there. You start to know the league quite well, and was always looking towards Europe or Switzerland or Germany, or to learn a new language, see a new country, evolve as a person too, to meet new people and all that. And I was very happy and fortunate to get the chance there in Kloten Flyers. There was a Swedish coach, Anders Eldebrink, back there, who needed a solid hockey worker, defensive D, and I played some power play too, of course, there, like a complete D who could eat minutes in that league. And that was a good experience to get there in Switzerland. And we went to German classes too in the afternoons, and that of course helped me in the future too to get to know a new language and a new culture.
Yeah, like obviously me knowing you, you can speak German, sorry, very, very fluently. And obviously after Cloten, you went to Wolfsburg there for 3 years. How long would you say it kind of took you to be confident speaking the language? Because it's not an easy language to learn.
Well, I'm still not super confident with it. You know, I'm throwing out a lot of words in German, but somehow people understand what I say most of the times, at least. So, but you can't be afraid of speaking. That's what it is. Like, you need to just keep on working on it and keep on speaking as much as possible and trying to read some books and papers. And I'm probably not going to be super in German throughout my whole life anyway, but people understand me, and that's enough for me.
That's good enough. I agree with that. I mean, you stayed 3 years in Wolfsburg, so you obviously enjoyed your time playing there. You know, that was, you know, almost 14 years ago, I would say, when you started in the league. Like, how has the league in general, the DEL, changed since you were playing in it?
The year I came to Wolfsburg, I think that was 08-09 probably, or something like that.
08-09.
Exactly. And we didn't have a gym there. That was like an empty big room, an empty room there. And then the GM back there, Charlotte Flieghoff, he came to me and like, yeah, we haven't had that many players on a high level here before in Wolfsburg. Can you help me? What do we need in a gym? You know, like we need some weights, you know, racks so we can do some squats, and maybe a mirror or two, or that, a little bit of that stuff. And I was like, okay, I'll try. A couple of bikes would be good too. So he went on eBay and bought some used bikes there. So it's over the years in Germany, like there's more and more teams are getting more professional with the strength conditioning coaches too, and their and physios and all that. So we're slowly getting there to be more. Of course, you have the top teams; they already had it because they can see what a soccer is doing in Germany. So they've been fully equipped with everything. But that was an eye opener to come to a new team like Wolfsburg, to help them build a culture and be a little bit more professional.
Maybe you're the reason they've become such a constant powerhouse recently in the DL from you, your days there.
I guess I'm a small part of it, and I'm proud of being a little small piece of the whole building. And Charlie's been doing an amazing job up there to build up a hockey club basically from nothing.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, just my familiarity with the DL, like they have definitely come a long way, and you know, he's done a great job there, as you said. After your time in Wolfsburg, you played one more season, so a little bit in Sweden, then you finished in Linz there in the top Austria league. What was your reasoning for kind of moving on from playing and then transitioning into the coaching?
My last season there, I was actually I as a person was actually planning to stay in Wolfsburg for a couple of more years. And then, but then my wife got a job. She's a physiotherapist, a chiropractor. So she got a job back home in Sweden. And I was 36 at that time. So we said, okay, I'm not going to play for that many more years. And then we said, we had a short talk in the family there. We said, okay, let's move back, take that job, and we moved back to Sweden. And then I was asking the closest clubs there, that was Modo and Skellefteå in SHL back there. And I asked them if they had an interest, and Modo said, no, we're not going to sign a 36-year-old guy. You're too old for us. And but Skellefteå was a little bit in their build there too. And they said, okay, there might be something good to bring in an older, experienced guy and see it, like, because there was a young team that was when Skellefteå really started everything. Those Adam Larsson was there in the preseason, and for example, and a couple of other NHL players too, who came through that system there. So it was fun to be a part of that system too, for almost a season. But then in the end of January, I was done. I was close to 37. I was playing in the SHL where everybody was just skating. That was too much for me. And I got an offer from Linz to to go there and finish, wrap up my career. And I went up to the GM and asked him, hey, I got an offer from Linz here. You know, I can stay here and play till the end of the season, no problem, but I would like to go there. And then the GM said, man, let me think about it over the weekend. And he came to me Monday, hey, yeah, you can go. We got a hold of a player here. It's John Klingberg. So we can't let you go. So John came from Finland there, and I think he did a pretty good trade from the GM there. So I was fortunate to go to Linz and wrap up my career there and win the Austrian Championship. So that was a good way to end the career. And 2 days after, one day or 2 days after I ended up the career, Modo called me and asked me if I wanted to go into coaching, and that was a pretty easy decision to make there, because my family was already living in Örnsköldsvik. Modo, and to work with that youth system or the under 20 program there, that was a lot of fun. With that year we had Victor Olofsson, Robert Hegg, Linus Olmark, William Nylander, and Adrian Kempe. So it was a pretty good team and fun to work with that team too.
Lots to talk about there. One, I was going to say, you've had some famous moments. You know, you helped Wolfsburg turn it around. You were traded for John Klingberg. So that's
that's the biggest achievement in my career.
No. But those are notable for sure. But yeah, and then obviously that great chance to go into coaching, and like some of the guys you just named, like playing on that team, and they're all in the NHL, and that just again goes back to the development of Sweden and what a good job they're doing. One thing I wanted to ask you just before we kind of move on from your playing career was, what like adversities would you say you faced? And the one that I just come to mind, and you can tell me if it's true or not, was maybe size as a defenseman, because like back then, like everybody getting, you know, drafted, it was, you know, they were 6'5", 6'6", like it was all about size, playing that, you know, physical game. And you yourself, you know, you're only 5'11". I mean, we're the same height, but for that era, you were probably a smaller defenseman.
Yeah, for sure. Like back then, when there was nobody, it was even like all the NHL scouts in Sweden back at that time, there was like, if you were not like 6'1", 6'2", as a D-man, there was no chance to get drafted. I think the rules changed a little bit there, and they saw like the mobile D-mans were still able to play in the league in North America and do good for the teams, that changed over the years there. But to be honest, I wasn't good enough for NHL anyway, but maybe for a draft, if I would have played today, I could have been drafted maybe, because back then you didn't have that much high-end players either. So I had a chance to play in the league when I was quite young too. And but the height for sure was the biggest. So if you look at the North America, absolutely.
Yeah, it was just a different time and a different mindset, yeah, on what they felt, you know, the league should be and what players they were interested in bringing in. Yeah. Speaking of the NHL, obviously after you coached in Modo in the U20, and then also you were the coach in the SHL in the top league there. But after that, you went and for 2 years, you were an NHL scout. Like, how did that opportunity come about for you? Because that's obviously a really good, you know, thing to have on your resume, and obviously a great experience to kind of keep learning.
Absolutely. It's, you know how it is. You got to be at the right time and the right spot, and then a little bit of a luck too. But I when I played in Skellefteå there, I played for Anders Forsberg, who was the coach there. And he actually became the head coach in Modo. So I was playing for him, and we had a good relationship there. And then he became the head coach in Modo. So I ended up being his assistant coach with the Modo, with the pro team then. And unfortunately, Anders got fired my last year in Modo as a coach. So he went straight ahead back to Buffalo as a scout, because he was with those people before. In Tim Murray was the GM in Buffalo at that time, and I think he worked with him in Ottawa back in the days when they drafted Eric Karlsson and that. So Anders and I had a good relationship there, and he said we need another guy, another Swedish scout for Buffalo Sabres at that time. And I got fired fired from a job in Modo about November, I think mid-November or something. And he called me the day after, asked me, and literally offered me the job as a European scout for Buffalo. And that was a little bit of luck at that moment to be there available too. So I don't regret it.
Sometimes that's what it is. People you know, and being a little lucky in the business. How was that? Were you strictly focused in Sweden? Were you covering, you know, lots of countries in Europe? And like, how did that kind of help you like learn and almost like develop your own kind of philosophies now that you use in your current job?
First of all, like I did both Europe, a lot of Finland. Sweden, Finland was basically my main areas. So I was mostly Sweden, of course, but I went down to Germany, Switzerland too, to watch games there and watch players. And for me, the biggest thing was to be, I was playing, you know, you're coaching, you're just standing on the ice, like on the ice surface. You don't see, you see game, the game in one way, and right away you move up in the stands, you start to see the game a little bit different than what I really did my first year as a scout. I think I saw 250 or 260 games, and all the other scouts were like, hey, come on, Axel, you make us look bad here. Like but I just wanted to learn the game and get to be on top of it, like what are the best players doing, and just to follow the players over the season too. And I'm really happy today that I did it, because that gave me a good sense of what the top players are doing. It doesn't matter if it's an under 20 league or it's in Sweden or Germany or Switzerland or wherever it is. Like they have a lot of things common, the top players, and that's something you learn by watching and seeing.
Well, and definitely just for me, spending the time with you that we were together in Switzerland watching the U18s there, like just seeing how quick you can see a player and right away, like, give a rating or you have an opinion on their game. For me, that was very cool to see. And I think that goes back to how much experience you have doing. And like you said, that first year seeing 250, 260 games, like that's just every day it's you're getting in the rhythm. And then it just becomes like, you know, second nature to you.
Yeah. I it's a lot of experience too. And I started my scouting career when I was coaching in Modo there, because we didn't have a GM who traveled. He was more giving us names. Hey, look at this player. And then you started to watch them on the video, you know, watch them 10 games, all the shifts for 10 games. And then you started to get a feeling for it. And somehow I enjoyed it. I liked it. And maybe you have an eye for it as well. And, but in the end of the day, it's a lot of hours. There's no shortcuts to any to be good at anything. And that, I think I spend my learning hours to. But at the same time, it's easy to rate a player at the moment, but you need a couple of years to see if you're right or not. So we'll see in 3-4 years if your ratings were better than mine. That's hard to tell today.
No, that's true, because obviously guys, you know, have different development paths, and, you know, some guys are earlier developers, some guys are late bloomers. So, but I still thought it was pretty cool to see how, you know, the details that you would go into your reports, and just the language you would use. Like, it was definitely very cool to see. What would you say, you know, now you have transitioned into Mannheim. So you're the sports manager there, or North America, as they call it, general manager. So you're in control of building the roster, you know, still scouting, talking to agents, all that stuff, a lot more as well. But I wanted to ask, one, how did that kind of opportunity come to fold? Because at least in North America, if you were to say one day, I want to be the GM in the NHL, you have to go step by step up the ladder. So maybe you start as, you know, a scout for an OHL team, then you get promoted to assistant GM, then you become the GM there, then you go to the AHL or whatever. So it's like, it's a longer road, and you were two and a half years, whatever, as a scout, and then immediately you got such a great opportunity.
It's Once again, you got to be at the right moment. It's a lot of luck for sure to be available at that moment. And when I came to Wolfsburg, I played for the coach, Pavel Groster. So I played for him 3 years, and we stayed in contact after that too. And during my time as a scout, I helped him with some reports too about players. And Mannheim cleaned the house with the manager, with the coach, everything in November 2017, I guess that was. And so they did it a little bit the opposite way. They signed the coaches first in Mannheim. So they signed Pavel Gross and Mike Pelgrims as coaches. And then they were like, okay, we might need a general manager or a sport manager too here to get everything rolling. And then Pavel mentioned my name to the owner, Daniel Hopp. And Daniel Hopp flew up to Sweden and met me. And I gave him a little bit of a presentation, how I see everything, how it should be run, and how I see the players. And so all that. And then I got an offer a couple of days later. So that's how it's been for me.
Must have been a good presentation.
Or they didn't have anyone else on the to get the job.
Or you fooled them pretty good. And then the next question I had, just, you know, obviously being in that role now, you know, Mannheim, when I think of it, I think of it as, you know, in terms of Germany, like a Montreal Canadiens, a Toronto Maple Leafs, and New York Rangers. Like it's probably one of the 3-4 mecca organizations in terms of history when you think of German hockey. And I wanted to ask, when you're building your rosters, like, what are your philosophies in building, or like, what is it that you think, like, these are Mannheim players? Like, what are you looking for?
First of all, we have a little bit of a challenge when we build the rosters here. We have we can use 9 imports. We can address 9 imports. We have 3 under 23 players. They have to be Germans as well, eligible to play for the German national team. And then you have a 9 plus 3, then you're up to 12. And then you have 7 normal German licenses up to. We address 19 players every game. So that's the first thing you have to see. You got to find the young players, under 23 players. Do we have them in the team or not? And then the amount of German players is not that big, so you can just pick and choose, as you have in North America, for example, or Sweden. There you have a lot of players to choose between. So, and sometimes you're stuck with some players with a long-term contracts, because the top players usually sign long-term contracts in Germany. So you gotta evaluate what you have on the team right there, and then you can add different assets with the imports. I would say that's where you can make the difference. Like if you have top offensive Germans, then maybe you don't need that many top offensive guys as an import. That's a little bit. But what for me the most important is good characters. That's what I look for, number one. I do a lot of due diligence to see if are they selfish players who doesn't care about the team. Then I let them go somewhere else. Like that's a team mindset is number one for me, that they understand the importance of playing for the team. That's absolutely the most important thing. And the compete level too. Are they willing to go first to the pucks? Are they going to the hard areas? Do they have the second effort in the battles, or are they just giving up a back check? Like that kind of stuff is very important as well. And of course, they got to be good skaters. Hockey today, you need to be able to skate. If you're not, especially on the big surface as well, like if you're not able to skate, you will not have a chance even, neither to play offensively or defensively. And then what we can give up a little bit is with the hockey sense. Like to play NHL today, you need to have high hockey sense. It doesn't matter if you're a defensive player or an offensive player, you need to have high hockey sense and a quickness in it. Your thinking, processing the game, you have to be smart and quick there. We can give up a little bit of that. We can give up a little bit of puck skills here too, to have role players, as long as they can move on the puck on a decent level, they're fine. So that's a little bit in the big part what I'm thinking of and what I look for when I build the players and build a team with the different kind of players.
Well, it's like building a puzzle. I think that's a pretty, you know, every piece is different. It's unique. Do you think when, this is just my thought of it, when you're building a roster, obviously, as you said, you want, for example, you want everyone in a perfect world, they need to be good skaters. And you'd be willing to give a little on other factors or other attributes. Does it work the other way? Like if you were to find someone who maybe isn't the best skater, but they're really smart with the puck, let's just say like a defensive defenseman, for example, like he can make a good first pass, he can break out. Is that something that also you would think, okay, I can sacrifice this guy in terms of being a little slower because he's really smart with the puck and doesn't need to use his speed as much?
He would not be the first guy assigned. But sometimes you, in the end of the summer, or you have a couple of spots still open, and then you see, okay, we have four quicker Ds, you know, we have that those assets on the team. In that case, I could go after that. But if I would have a open, like all spots open, I would not go after a player like that. I still think you need to be a good skater today, for example. That's and overall, if you look at the team, of course, you need offensive guys, you need the defensive guys. You can't only have a certain amount of power play guys, for example, on the team. Otherwise, you will run into problem. But that's everywhere the same. That's no rocket science.
This one might be hard to answer, but what's the hardest part of your job?
The hardest part is to predict who the player's gonna click together. Like you can have a lot of good characters, you do the background check, but at the end of the time, like, why don't they get together as a team? Is it like because of the players, or is it the coach? And as when you work with people, you have 30 people in a locker room with the staff and to get the environment going there. And then of course you need to have the 5-6 leaders on the team who takes care of it on the team. You need a good coach to empower the captains on the team. I guess to get that dynamic going, that's not the easiest when you're not, as a manager, you're not down in the locker room every day. And sometimes the locker room has its own life, and to predict what's going on there, that's really tough.
That makes sense for sure. It's one of those things you do the best, and then, you know, if there are things you need to adjust, you hopefully can adjust them, and, you know, puzzle pieces in and out. Would you say that you, if you had the choice, like I could be a coach or a GM, like, would you say you prefer being a GM overall?
I would say so. Yes. I got fired as a coach, and so last time I was coaching, but that was a lot of years ago. It feels now, and it changed so much, you know. And I enjoy it more, and I think I'm better evaluating players and see the players from the stands and think what would make work on a team. But at the same time, I loved it under 20 coach when I was a defensive coach there, and I worked with Robert Hägg every day, for example, and that's something I could see myself do in the future as well. That was fun to see the development, how much you can achieve during 6, 7, 8 months when you work with the players every day, and to see the players succeed in the end of the day, and you know you've been a little piece of that whole puzzle. That was fun too.
I'm curious, like for me, I've always had the envision of I would rather be on the management side. Like I think I'm better suited for that, like sitting up top, watching games, etc., building teams. Did you always, like when you were done playing, like was it in your head, okay, I want to be hopefully a GM one day, or was it, I'm going to start in coaching, see how that goes? And then as you were coaching, you were kind of like, okay, I think I would rather be on the other side of it.
Well, I never had a goal to be a general manager. I never had a goal to be a scout. I never had a goal to be a SHL coach. I never had a goal to be a under 20 coach either. So it's for me, it's always been there. Like I've been doing my best every day. And then I think when I've been ready, or I've been at the right point, or the chance has been given me, like that's the door has been opened for me, okay, all the way. And that's how I work too. Like I'm not today, am I dreaming or thinking, well, what's the next step in my career? Absolutely not. I just try to do my best every single day here. And if it doesn't work out here in the future, I think that something will open up for me too.
Live in the moment. I think that's pretty fair to say. Do you always want to stay involved in hockey? Like what, like obviously in the future, there's, I'm sure a new opportunity will come about. Is it, are you hoping it's always involved in hockey?
That's the only thing I've been doing my whole life. I would say like that's why my dad used to tell me like, hey, man, you haven't been working one single day in your life. Yeah. So he's a little bit, I don't know, jealous, or he's a little bit upset or whatever. I tried to raise you that you got to be a good worker, but now you're staying in the hockey somehow. So that's the only thing I know, I would say. So, but of course, maybe there's something interesting that comes up in the future. I don't know. Time will tell.
Did you think when looking back at your career, I guess you could say both playing and working, as your dad would say, up to this point, did you think you would have this kind of career in your life when you're looking back on it?
Not at all. Absolutely not.
Straight, fair to the point. Okay, two more for you. I know you're busy, so I'll get through them quick. Any tips for anyone listening? So like for this podcast, I'm hoping there's a lot of young listeners listening, whether they're starting their hockey journey in junior, college, pro, whatever it is. But, you know, obviously you can only play so long. So I know they have aspirations for after hockey. So anyone who would like to be in the management side, general manager one day, any tips for them?
I would say, do your best every day and be curious, like talk to people. That you will learn something from every people you meet, every meeting, every conversation. There will be something you can bring with you. Like if somebody tells you something, like don't take it as a criticism. See it as advice. I say, okay, maybe he's right. Maybe, and then you can evaluate those things for your own. And then, but be curious. Like don't be afraid to talk to people. Try to set up meetings, whether it's with a local coach or the local GM, and see what he's doing. And most of the people are open, and they will share information with you. And the more and more information you get, you're willing to dig in and work, you will have a chance to climb the ladder for sure. And or you realize that hockey is not for you. That's a good thing too. Maybe if you figure out that, okay, that's too much job or too much work or whatever it might be, that doesn't fit you. But that's the only thing, like be open for everything, be curious. And once more, don't be afraid to put in the hours.
It is I think a lot of people who like just see it from the outside, they don't realize what happens behind the scenes, how much work it is, how much of a grind it is at times. Not saying that negatively, but it is, you know, you need to have the luck, as you said, you need to put in all the hours, do the extra, you know, if you're scouting, go to 300 games a year, like you did, that's a good starter.
But at the same time there, sorry to interrupt you, but at the same time, I love it. Yeah. I love it. I wake up 2 o'clock in the morning, like our local time, to watch the Florida Toronto games. I watch the Manitoba Milwaukee games too. And I, even if it's 2 hours later, and I might be a little bit tired during the days when I'm in the office once in a while, but I just love it. I love hockey. And I guess it helps for sure to have the passion for it as well.
No, I agree. I think if anyone listening was to be like, hey, would you rather work a normal office job 9 to 5, or would you work this job where there's not specific hours? As you said, you wake up at 2 a.m. and sometimes you're tired, but it's your passion. And obviously, you know, they have coffee, so that gets you,
yep,
gets you through the day.
I have a lot of friends who are still working in the iron mine back home in northern part of Sweden. I think some of them would like to make the trade with me today. So
I'm sure. Last one here, kind of similar to the other one, but I ask every guest this. What is one piece, or maybe multiple pieces, of advice you would give your younger self? So if you were talking right now to your younger self, you know, your 16, 17-year-old Axel Oliveira, what are one or a couple of things you would give him some advice?
I would have said, like, be a little bit, I was a little bit stubborn maybe that was good for me to be stubborn and believe in myself. But I learned over the years that people around you, they have good ideas, and you don't know everything by your own. And as a player, that would benefited me to have listened to coaches around me and worked more with that individual stuff. I thought I knew everything, and what can they tell me? And I think I would have worked, but the culture wasn't that you worked with the individual stuff back in the days. And I would have had a skating coach for sure that would have worked with me on a daily basis, and that would have been the thing too. I would say the number one thing.
Well, I appreciate you taking, you know, the time out of your busy schedule, obviously, to join me here. And I hope anyone listening has, you know, got some good advice today. I know I definitely have, of, you know, how to be a pro hockey player, but also how to just have a passion for the game and kind of follow your dreams and, you know, also get a little bit lucky. But obviously you've done a great job and you keep working your way up. So again, Axel, I appreciate you taking the time today.
No, it was a lot of fun too.
And for those listening, hope you enjoyed it. And until next week, cheers and ciao.